Just by way of background, because I don't think a lot of people know much about how the courier process works. I certainly didn't before I read about your award. How would this work during normal times, you know, getting a diplomatic packet in or out of a foreign country? It's not FedEx, right?
That is correct. It is not FedEx. My job is to escort the classified material between the Department of State and our embassies and consulates overseas. So my job is to make sure that this material of a national security importance is not seized or tampered with while it's in transit. That means starting from a secure facility in Washington, D.C., and never letting the material out of my sight until I arrive at my destination. So as you can imagine, if you picture international travel, that means going with this material. And just to put it in perspective, 50 years ago, classified material meant paper documents, handwritten letters. Today, our communication style has changed. We use computers. We use other means of communication. So this can be anything from 1 pound to 10,000 pounds of classified material at any time. And I can't let it out of my sight. So I have to go from when I leave the classified vault to the airport and get through the airport, all of airport security, without this material being seized or tampered with or opened, to the aircraft, load it onto the aircraft, and then to my destination, where I do the same process in reverse.
Now, ostensibly, that doesn't include actually riding in the cargo hold of the aircraft. You just have to watch it being loaded, right?
That is correct. Once it's loaded onto the aircraft and put underneath the cargo hold, I'll always have a second team member with me underneath the aircraft, because this material is so important to our national security that we won't let anyone tamper with it. So just as they close the doors underneath the aircraft, my teammate will watch the material while I head upstairs just before takeoff time. And at this point, I've already had communication with the pilot and the flight crew, so they know I'm down below, and they know I'm coming up just that second before they close the door.
And so take us back to last year when the uprisings actually began. You, from what I gather, were a brand new supervisor in the courier service. We start seeing these massive activities of unrest across several countries, embassies potentially under threat. What's going through your head, to the extent you can repeat those thoughts on the radio?
Well, I was surprised and absolutely a little bit scared, to be honest, because the breadth of the work was so huge. In a normal situation, we would use our typical diplomatic methods to achieve all of these goals. So from the situation I just described to you, you can see that we would need access to the tarmac, which in this world of security, you know, we don't always have. And we would need access to bring material out onto the airplane without getting x-rayed or screened by a foreign government. So the way we traditionally did that was through diplomacy. And we would write a diplomatic letter. So our embassy overseas would write a dip note or a diplomatic note to the Foreign Affairs Ministry of the host nation. And the host nation would consider this note, and then they would make a ruling, and they'd send the ruling back to our embassy. And then the embassy would be able to communicate with the airport. Well, the Arab Spring happened fast, as situations in the world do, and we didn't have time for that in this scenario. So part of what made this so difficult was that we had to act really fast, because these places that were in crisis were the exact places where we had Americans on the ground at the front lines who needed their classified material in order to do their jobs.
Sure.
And so my job was to get them what they needed to do their jobs.
And the award citation says you found workarounds. We've only got a couple minutes left for this segment, but can you describe some of those, how you got around these situations in this time-critical situation?
One of the best ways was using our great partnerships with our different vendors, like airlines, in order to achieve these goals, because we couldn't necessarily use the diplomatic method because everything was happening so quickly. But what we could use is our partners, like our airlines, ability to do what we wanted to do. For example, an airline could possibly get us access to a tarmac. So by leveraging these partnerships and taking advantage of all of the resources we had, we opened new doors and found new business practices. It turns out it is another good way to get tarmac access to use our airlines. And so we've moved forward using that still.
So that's in play today, those, as you said, business practices, even in non-crisis situations.
That's correct. And one of the greatest things that I think we all learned, that I know I personally learned, is that in a time of crisis, you can achieve so much when everyone really is behind the goal and you don't have the option to accept no for an answer. And so trying to hold on to that tenacity in more peaceful times, or in times when you do have the option to accept no but you don't want to, holding on to that same drive is really helpful in achieving other goals.